What's up?
Hey, folks, Jerry here. Welcome to the Pioneers of Insight podcast, a show that explores the wipeouts, crackups, and recoveries of inspiring and influential people. Here you'll get the stories of the quest to find success beyond the struggle and the great leaps of innovation that take us there. People that sound like this.
JLD.
Mm-hmm. What's up,
Jerry?
What's up, man? What's up, brother?
Thank you so much.
Oh, I'm excited to be here, Jerry. Fantastic. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Fun today.
Keep telling your story as well.
Yeah, man.
So how are you doing, man?
Pretty good. You know.
Did you get yourself a burrito?
Yeah, I just got a little Zeppelin sandwich.
Today, we deep dive the life story of Akbar Sheikh, who built an empire from a windowless utility closet after nearly losing his life to an accidental overdose. All right, strap in, folks, as we head into a story about finding new life at what appears to be the end of the road. Enjoy, and I will catch you on the other side.
It feels good, doesn't it?
It's nice. Well, I tell you what, it feels good to have a productive day and not have any appointments.
Akbar Sheikh, welcome to the Pioneers of Insight. So happy you could join me today.
That's my pleasure. Thanks for having me, man.
Well, we had a little chat before we came on, and to let the audience in on what we were chatting about, I basically was stalking you for a little bit. I found you on LinkedIn, and I'm kind of a story stalker. So you're a pretty savvy marketer, and your story is kind of like woven into your brand. So I went out there looking, and I listened to a few interviews, and I'm excited you decided to join us because I think you have a story that's not only going to move our audience, but it gives us an opportunity to really get a sense of what it takes to overcome and to do something more than just overcoming.
Yeah, no, that, you know, it's really interesting. Actually, you said that you found me on LinkedIn. There's this concept in life that I've really been tripping on lately, and that is everything's a stepping stone. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, you must have just caught me on LinkedIn just as I was getting on. I was never on LinkedIn. If I didn't have LinkedIn, perhaps you never would have bumped into me. Now you've bumped into me, you were kind enough to invite me to your show, which is a great privilege. Now maybe someone's listening to your show. Now maybe A, they want to work with me, or B, they want to invite me to something else, like a speaking engagement or whatever. I mean, all these things, and this is how it's been going for me lately. It's just like everything is a stepping stone, but the cool part about that is like to just kind of keep going and keep ending, and like things happen. Like when you, I think it's just like pure science, right? When it's just momentum, right? Because if you're taking action, you're moving, just things happen.
You know? Well, yeah, that's part of the conversation that I want to have with you, because there's a deeper element to it. Because as a person who's struggled and legitimately struggled, and we'll hear that in your story, there is some sort of principle that people that find their way on the other side and find success start to see. And that is, there's more than just a mindset to momentum. And you're talking about it. There's connections that start to unfold, and just opportunities to expand just start showing up with the mindset and energy that you have. And you're starting to talk to it already. I want to ask you the question of like how you see what you do every day. Because business is one part of our identity, but what's more important to me is how a person sees who they are and what they do each and every day. So let's imagine there's two of you, and there's a clone of you. And this clone has the same awareness that you have, but Akbar number two is following you around. What would that person see?
I would say that they see a passionate person who's really trying to do something special. You know, because to me, like, yeah, we've helped seven people hit seven figures, but, and that's cool. But like, to me, it's, and frankly, and I'll just be like, most people will never do that in their entire lives, right? And I just kind of started recently, and I'm not saying that in like an egotistical way, but to me, it doesn't mean much. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, it's a very, like a lot of people look at $1 million and they say, that's my end goal. Like, I can't say how many entrepreneurs I've interviewed and be like, oh, I want to make $1 million. Every time I hear that, it's the wrong answer, because Now you tell me about your dreams. And dreams are useless because what I would prefer is someone to give me, talk to me about their goals, because a goal is really a dream that you can actually write down, make a plan to achieve it, work towards it, and eventually get it instead of just, you know, dreaming about it. So it's interesting, you know, $1 million is the wrong answer because you have to think about, and it's funny you ask me this because I'm always massaging this. I'm looking at my whiteboard right now and I'm looking at my goals. And, you know, I'll tell you some of them. It's about buying a farm for philanthropy. It's about bringing my family together. It's about just doing charity work. It's nothing about, and it's interesting because I'm part of some high level masterminds. And they're all very money focused. You know, they're always talking about how to increase their bottom line, how to make more margins and this and that. And there's a DISC test. I'm sure you're familiar with the DISC test.
Yes.
And it tells you what you value in life, what's important to you. And I recommend everyone take it. It's really fascinating. And everyone scored very high on the economic scale. They all wanted to, you know, make more money. Money is all about money. For me, my economic scale was low, and everyone was shocked. Like, what? Like I didn't fit in. Like, I was the guy. And my impact level was high. And that's really what we're trying to do here, is all of us have been given God-given skills. We're all good at something. You know, that's why I might talk freely about my accomplishments, because it's not me, it's just a God-given skill. It's got nothing to do with me. All of us have God-given skills. It depends what you just do with it. So I'm really looking to make an impact, a real positive difference in the world. So I think that clone would see someone who's kind of all over the place, probably need to focus a little bit more. Just someone who wants to make a difference, probably needs to be a little bit more focused, but who's helping a lot of people along the way. And it's trying to have some, it's trying to find some meaning behind it as well.
First off, I asked you how you see yourself showing up in the world, and there is a part of you that has to struggle to go to the I. You speak from the we a lot. You talked about your company a lot, and so I'm tracking your superpowers. One superpower you hear showing up already is, you're not just thinking about you. You're a person that's thinking about the growth of the people around you. That's one thing that I hear. The second is, you're a person that had a dream because you're behind the helm of this business. However, you're a person that achieves by having a clear sense of direction and how to get there. So goals is a big part of your life. Goals is a part of your vision as you move forward, and it continues to be. And it's also part of your connections. You're making connections with powerful people in your life. And a lot of that is around that aspect of you that needs that for you to move forward. So let's say that I gave your mom a call. I dialed her up right now. What would she say you do every day?
I have no idea.
I get that one a lot.
Yeah, that's funny. No, she doesn't know. It's funny because you know, we have a little bit of an audience, a little bit of an influence, and, you know, semi-popular in some small circles online. And my mom started getting calls from like my aunts and stuff, who I have no idea how they bumped on me online. I'm not, you know, friends with them or anything like that. Not for any reason, but they're like, why didn't you tell us your son's doing these cool things? And my mom's like, what are you talking about? What is he doing? So no, honestly, she doesn't really understand.
Well, let's just say she doesn't understand. What would she say? What do you think she would say?
I think she would say that he tries to help people. He tries to help businesses grow.
See why I asked that question? Because it cuts right to the heart of what's going on. Huh. And that's what I started to hear already. One of the superpowers that you have at the heart of your enterprise. You got this big enterprise, but really it's about helping people. One of the things that I'm hearing already is, there's two things going on with Akbar. Akbar's got this powerful sense of direction and a dream, but he's also an executor. He's able to execute on his life goals. However, you weren't always the guy that was helping entrepreneurs making seven figures. There was a guy, an Akbar, a version of Akbar, that had to overcome some pretty big challenges to get the insights to be the person that you are now. So where was that point in your life where the fire was burning so hot, maybe things were so difficult and the struggle was so great, you got some clarity on where you wanted to go. What was going on in your life? Who was in your life, and where were you at?
You know, it's funny. I pick on in a friendly manner, kind of the more younger millennials. And I say, you know, one of my biggest problems with them is that they haven't paid their dues. They never got their butts kicked. Mm-hmm. You know, we got our butt kicked for a very long time. I was not too long ago, I was a complete and utter mess, more so than I am today. I was 70 pounds overweight. I was in a toxic relationship. I was married to the absolute wrong person. I had terrible friends. Party animals, you know, the kinds you'd see like in a cheesy kind of 80s movie. What else? I had no why. I wasn't spiritual. My gosh. Pretty much everything that a human consists of and is composed of, I was failing. If somebody was grading my life on all different aspects, cleanliness, F. You know, language, polite language, F. You know, like, you know, check. But healthy habits, fail. You know, like everything, just fail, 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 fail.
How old were you? Just give us a reference point.
Funny, people ask me that, and I kind of blank out a little bit. Those years were kind of fuzzy.
You can give me a span. That'll work.
30-ish, mm-hmm. 30-ish, something like that. Probably 28, 29, 30, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Where were you at?
Connecticut. And what happened was I developed, and I hated what I did for a living, by the way. I hated what I did for a living. And I could never find something that I enjoyed doing, which really bogged down on me a lot too, by the way. I think a lot stemmed from that as well. My relationship was so bad. Everything was so bad in my life. I ended up developing, my body gave up eventually. And I ended up developing a crippling anxiety disorder because my body and mind were so out of whack, which makes total sense. The body gave me warning signals like, dude, clean up your act, or, you know, I didn't listen to the warning signals. Yep. Eventually went out of whack. That was terrible. That was literally torture. I mean, literally torture on a daily basis for quite some time. Anyway, I started mixing my anxiety medication, which is useless, by the way.
So benzos you're mixing with alcohol or something?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Xanax, actually. Yeah. So those are two things you're not really supposed to be mixing. So I ended up half dead in a hospital. Yeah, I can just remember the evening, and we went, I was at, you know, in these, you know, terrible areas in urban areas, rundown areas with my friends, hanging out at stupid places. Had my Red Bull out and my Camel cigarettes, and, you know, we go out that night, we go drinking, we go partying. Feeling anxious, so I pop a Xanax. Now I'm feeling even worse. So I Google, like, what happens when you do these things, and it said very bad things. It says, well, you could die, and that just took me to, like, magnified all my symptoms 100%. Now I really felt like I was dying, because and I really kind of felt like that before I Googled it. I just ended up going to the ER. I was literally just like half dead at that point. Like, I was just, you know, they treated me like an animal when I got there. They put me in this weird ward, this weird area where they took my jewelry off, and they took my watches and my watch and glasses and everything. And, you know, I don't know what was happening. And I felt like, oh my God, I'm going to die any second. And I kind of just made, you know, I was trying to just kind of make peace. Then the doctor came. Did some tests on me, did some cognitive tests on me, so on and so forth, and said, man, yeah, listen, you're fine. You know, you can't live like this. You can't continue to live like this anymore. I mean, right then and there, at that moment, at night, it was middle of the night, in Yale New Haven Hospital, which is ironic, because my dad always wanted me to go to Yale as a student. I ended up in the emergency room instead. Right then and there, I said, no, I'm going to... this is not how I'm going to live anymore. I'm going to change my life. And I literally quit all my bad habits. Too many to list here, but I quit all of them.
So there you are. You're basically in the room where they put addicts. They stripped you all down and you're having a panic attack. You make a promise to yourself that you're going to change.
Yeah.
And I heard a narrative that showed up for you is like the voice of your father comes in when you're telling that story of, you know, there's some expectations that you're carrying about who and what you're going to become. And you recommit to you again around that crisis. Now, I hear this a lot on our shows, like those transformational crises where you hit the bottom, bam, you hit it, and you bounce. And your bounce is this. It's a commitment. It's you start listing off all the things that you want to do and you want to become. So here you are a little lost, a little frustrated. You got a relationship that's not going so well, a toxic relationship. You got your family. I hear there's some powerful expectations from your dad. How are you communicating that bounce and what was that like for you?
I mean, I never really did anything to make my parents proud. I mean, it was really kind of a lot of the opposite. I mean, it was just pathetic. I was just like the opposite of what, you know, a good son would be. you know, so it's just, you know, you want to talk about hitting rock bottom and they say that you can only go one way. You can only go one way from rock bottom. And that was my moment where I hit rock bottom in my life. Just that moment right there. I'm blessed and humble and very happy to say, because a lot of people can't say this, but, you know, I took advantage of that. And I turned my entire life around like this, cold turkey, you know, which is why on a separate tangent, there's a lot of things I don't believe in for people, you know, who try to get rid of a lot of their addictions and stuff. But I just quit everything cold turkey. Everything. Left my wife. Got into a healthy relationship. Left my friends like cold turkey. I mean, these are my boys. Not an easy thing to do. You know, they still kind of hold a grudge against me. Actually.
So did you have to do like cutoffs? Just like cut them off clean? Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Cut them off clean. I should have explained it to him. I just was at that point in my journey. I couldn't. But I just cut everyone off. I mean, not everyone off. I cut my best friends off. I finally decided to leave my wife for good. I started becoming healthy. I started becoming spiritual. I started eating clean. Started doing yoga. Started praying. And life just very quickly, you know, became a lot better.
Were you able to communicate with your parents around the change, or were they just watching from a distance as maybe you needed some space?
No, I was living with them. I was living with them or I moved back in with them when I left my wife, and they were watching, and they were very, for the first time in a very long time, they were proud of my progress. They could see what was happening, you know, and they can see where I came from and what I've turned to be. And it was cool, man. It was a cool part of my life. Like, everybody for the first time was proud of me. You know, I was not like that. I was not the class joker anymore. I was not the class clown anymore. I was kind of like turning it to like a role model type. So I went from the joker, the guy everyone kind of like laughs with or laughs at, depending, to kind of the guy that people will start looking up to.
I've worked with a lot of people in challenges like addiction and just challenges with life around wipeouts. And for a man at almost 30 years of age to be devoted and committed enough and humble enough to go back into the home of their parents after a wipeout like that, this shows incredible resilience to be able to do that without going backwards. So you hit bottom after a hospital moment. It's around indulging, we'll call it that. But it sounds like your life had reached a critical point where it's not just about what you're reaching out to consume. You were just unhappy. And your relationships were part of it, your sense of disconnection from what and who you wanted to be and your purpose and all that stuff. You get out of the hospital, you make a commitment to yourself. The voice of dad shows up, the expectations. You're like, damn, I'm going to change this around. You turn around, you move in with your parents, and you make the change around your parents, and they're watching it. and you get incredible sense of satisfaction from it. That's what you're saying. Did I track you all right? All right, where'd you go next?
Yeah.
Where does it start to turn around?
Life is good. You know, life is getting good. Healthy, a little happier, more respectable, blah, blah, blah. Decided to migrate out west to my birthplace of San Francisco to kind of discover my why. I didn't have one.
What were you doing at the time? I think I heard in another interview, retail sales. Is that what you were doing?
Yeah, yeah. No, well, I mean, retail, then I was selling cars and I was going back and forth between retail and cars.
Okay, so you weren't happy with that stuff.
No, I hated it. For so many years, I hated what I did. Basically, my whole adult life. My whole life, I hated everything I did. Since I was a kid doing retail, and that was a lifelong struggle, you know, mm-hmm. to find something. So I finally migrated out west, had no money, so ended up living in an electrical closet in the back of an office building.
All right, we got to slow this part down because this is another part of Akbar's superpower. How in the hell do you go from a wipeout like that to gathering the courage to follow an impulse to go to the West Coast and then say, live in a fucking closet? Like, what? How do you do that?
Well, I couldn't have done it by myself. I went with my brother.
Okay.
You know, who was also, oddly enough, I mean, you can't even write this stuff, but oddly enough, he was going through the same sort of stuff I was going through. You know, as far as hating what he did and being in terrible relationships and being overweight and blah, 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 having some mental disorders, I suppose, and some
struggle, mental health issues. Yeah.
Yeah. Some emotional issues. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So we went to the West Coast to try to we had an idea to open a mattress store. Is a weird idea because we don't really have any money.
So the Banditos moved to the West Coast and you're relying on your brother for support. And you're like, we're going to start a mattress company. So here's another aspect of Akbar's superpower that we got to tease out. There's an innovator in you and you're exercising it. Meaning you have the talent, maybe your brother has this too, to go, we don't have shit, but we can do this.
Right.
There's not everybody can do that. So we need to track that. Like, that's already happening.
I think an entrepreneur's job is to create something out of nothing.
Uh-huh.
You know? So not to give a cheesy one-liner, but I honestly feel that people who can't make money without money will not be able to make money with money.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So money is not... has never stopped me from anything. I've never been, oh man, you know, I see these people, oh, if I had the money, mm-hmm. I would do this. Oh man, if only I had the money. Nonsense, excuses, you're just giving yourself excuses.
What would you call that? You look at your brother, you're destitute, you're broke, and you're looking at a closet and you're thinking about opening a mattress company. Like, what would you name that? How would you name that quality? What is it?
Ambitious.
Ambitious? Okay. We'll call it ambitious.
Or insanity. How about that?
Well, that's a good word because I think this is an important quality for a lot of innovators and entrepreneurs. You got to be willing to take risks with your imagination. And you did that. And maybe that's part of we were talking about earlier before the interview, things are just coming to you now, but you had to pull this thread and it started with these beginnings. Like when you didn't have shit, you're inventing stuff out of thin air. That's imagination. You're taking risks that other people don't take just in your thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was, there's this phrase in a different language in an old Indian language. It says,
can you say it in Indian?
Yeah, it says, the phrase is like deki jayengi.
Mm-hmm.
And deki jayengi translates, and by the way, I only speak English. I know a few words of a few other languages, but it translates to, we'll take it as it comes. We'll figure it out. Well, mm-hmm. deki jayengi, we'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. We'll see how it goes. So yeah, it was a big kind of deki jayengi kind of attitude.
Let me interpret that from my listening ears. You have to be willing to let go of the shit that's outside of your control and still be inventive while everything might not look right. Does that sound right?
Yeah. Like I was saying at the beginning about the whole LinkedIn thing, man. It's just, everything is a stepping stone to something. As long as you keep moving forward. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So let me take you back to the story. So you and your brother, West Coast, take this huge risk. We're starting a mattress company. You're living in a closet. Give us the, take us right from there. Like, what are you doing every day? What's the closet about? And where do you guys see yourself going? And how are you getting there?
We were lucky, man. We were looking at offices in some off, random office building in the middle of nowhere in the Bay Area. And we're looking at offices. I have no idea why. We can't afford it, really. And anyway, at the end of the tour, there's like this dark corner. And I kind of say, hey, like, what's that? You know, what's that? So that, just looking at me like a weirdo, like, why are you asking? She said, that's the electrical closet. And I said, can I see it? And I don't even know why I asked. But I said, can I see it? And she's looking at me real, like, nervous now. Like, why do you want to see my electrical closet? And she shows us, and it's an electrical closet. No windows, no hot water, no bathroom, nothing. And we just told her the story. We said, hey, listen, this is the situation. We don't really. She, lucky for us, she was an old West Coast hippie. And she felt for us. She rented us the room for $75 a month, utilities included. And we lived there, you know. We had hundreds of dollars, you know, to both of us combined. We had like hundreds of dollars together, right? Something like that. We did take an office, which was nothing. I mean, again, it was some back room office. It was a few hundred dollars a month. And we got some samples from some mattress vendors that you don't pay up front, you pay in 30 days. And we got a couple of mattresses and we started selling them from this back office building. We would kind of just put up ads, free ads on Craigslist. You know, so talk about extraordinarily low startup costs. I mean, literally cost us, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of dollars to start this business. You know, and we would sell one here, one there. Anyway, funnily enough, I lost interest very quickly. I was like, dude, this is stupid.
Why is that? What was the, what's going on in your head?
There's a lot of things going on. Honestly, I, at that point, was pretty ambitious. My brother was still going through his emotional issues.
Let's make this real. So, because this is about vulnerability on the show and you got it, you totally have it. So when you're talking about your brother has emotional issues, does that mean you're waking up every day and your brother's like angry all the time?
Yeah.
Or no, sad, or what does it mean?
What happened was he wouldn't wake up until like 1-2 o'clock, if I'm lucky, 1-3 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm up in the morning, I don't know, 8-ish or whatever, ready to rock and roll, ready to take over the world.
Right.
And it was so frustrating because I didn't want to do it by myself. Okay. I actually never really wanted to do any business by myself. I actually don't like being alone. Well, it's interesting. At that point, I didn't like being alone. Now I do, by the way. Yeah. But I never liked being alone. I would even leave the bathroom door open. I never liked being alone. Now it's the opposite. But I think it's because of all the pain I've gotten from trying to be in partnerships and stuff.
Well, I'm hearing this. This is another aspect of your superpower we got to bring out. Here you are. You're living in basically a closet. You have a shitty office. And you're basically using free marketing through Craigslist, but you're already operating like you have the enterprise. Your brother on the other end is like maybe more invested in his reality, which is like shitty. And his way of dealing with it is a different way. He's managing his emotions by checking out. Yours is going, I'm going to drive harder and faster. So we're learning more about your superpower.
Wow. Yeah, I never thought about that. That's how he was dealing with his emotions by checking out. Yeah, because he always wanted to be a millionaire by the time he was like 21.
Yeah.
Right? And he had big, big plans and he worked really hard and it fell on his face. Nothing became of it. He was in retail as well. Mm-hmm. Nothing became of it. Tried to build big businesses, failed completely. That crushed him for so many years. Mm-hmm. You know.
Is he around the same age when you were out there?
He's 2 years younger than me.
Okay.
Yeah, so by that time, I actually started getting involved. I was lightly involved in network marketing, internet marketing, lightly involved at that point because I was just trying to make a little bit of money. Mm-hmm. In that homeless state, I discovered the real way to build a brand on the internet. And I remember seeing it. I was just like, wow, you know, like this is incredible. I know why that button is red, and I know why that person's smiling, and I know why it's saying free today only. I don't know why, but I was searching for my why on Craigslist. I guess I didn't have too many other.
Well, now you know why, but yeah. Not then, right? Yeah.
Bump into this like internet marketing opportunity. Open the window, and it's just like a light emitted from the $100 laptop I had. You know, and it's just like, dude, I see everything clearly. I feel like Neo from the Matrix. And I'm just like, I see things. I see. Dude, this is brilliant. I think I saw the psychology of sales behind it. You know, and I'm just like, dude, this is brilliant. You know, and I loved it. I fell in love with it. You know, not the cheesy like internet, like, you know, buy now, only 3 minutes left. Like, not that, not any of that stuff.
Well, now I need to use my skill set to help our audience understand what is coming out in you at that moment. Because there's, let's just say at that exact moment in time on the planet, there could have been 4 million people looking the same thing. But for some reason with Akbar, you put it together. So is a trained psychologist or psychotherapist, I hear this. You have the skill set to understand how things translate to human behavior. Where did that come from? Is there somebody in your life that maybe was a mentor early on, or is this an interest, or is this just always been an ability up to that point in your life?
I think that was just a God-given gift that everyone has. Not, I mean, meaning everyone's got a gift. I think that was just, I have no idea. I mean, I did well in marketing in school. When I was a kid, I would make comments on billboards as we were driving on the highway. My dad said, wow, those are really intelligent comments. So that's why I say I think I was just born with it. Because even as a kid, you know, making comments on billboards, my dad would be like, huh. He looked at me kind of like, that's interesting coming out of your mouth.
So maybe we could say this is your Pandora's box moment. Like you discover your super, what you would say your superpower to make money. It all made sense to you. You're like, bam, just over.
Yeah, I was like, I need to get involved in this. I like this, you know. So then, you know, we did. We got involved. I didn't have any money to get involved. It was a couple of $1,000 to get involved. I didn't have the money. I had one possession to my name, which is my car, old beat up car, peanut butter interior, banana exterior. And
did the car have a name?
No. It was actually a beautiful, it was very, very cheap. I don't know why these cars have no value, but it was a beautiful classic 1988 Mercedes.
Dude, you said you were totally broke. You're driving around a Mercedes.
No. Listen, though. It's worthless. For some reason, those cars are worthless.
Huh, that's interesting.
I have no idea why. And it was beautiful. Like, so it was worth $2,000. So I sold the car, which was nuts because it was my only real possession.
What is your brother saying to you at this point?
He's probably sleeping when I did it.
All right.
You know, so I sold my last possession, which I guess I kind of burnt all my bridges, burnt all the ships. And I gave him the money. I said, all right, let's try this out. And I went in with the mentality and I saw these people. Here's what happened. I start the program. So I'm on the phone every day trying to make sales. You know, with this internet program, it's like a digital franchise, you know, selling digital educational products, right? Like how to do well with SEO or whatever, right? Week goes by, I didn't make any sales. Another week goes by, I don't make any sales. Another week goes by, I don't make sales. A month goes by, no sales. I'm on the phone every day pretty much, not making any sales. At this point, I think 99.9% of people give up, right? It's like, but that right there, I definitely had a turning moment in my life because I've given up many times because I've failed in businesses many times throughout my life. And I gave up each and every time. I mean, so many different businesses, fashion, online. I can go through, I mean, I tried all sorts of things, right?
Check, 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 check. Yep.
Yeah. But I said to myself right then and there, because I knew that I was like, wait a minute, these other people in this opportunity are making money. And I looked at them and I talked to them and I'm like, dude, they're just weirdos and dummies just like me. Okay. And I said right then and there, I said, you know what? I can do two things right now. I can blame the system, say scam, 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 doesn't work. Or I can look in the mirror and say, dude, I'm not doing it right. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. I said, you know, I'm on the phone every day. Why am I not closing sales? So I tweaked my approach. I tweaked my script. I started having more of a servitude attitude. Mm-hmm. I was trying to say what's in it for them, mm-hmm. as opposed to just talking about the system so much. Right away, my first sale, I'll never forget it, $500.
Feel good? What did it feel like?
It's an interesting question. You know, some people might think I'm jumping up and down. Not at all. Mm-hmm. Not at all. You know, I felt like, yeah, this is what's supposed to happen. Like, mm-hmm. like destiny. Like, yes, this is correct. This is how it's the domino is supposed to fall. And then $500 a month, $1,000 a month, $2,000, $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $100,000, on and on. It came from that moment where I decided, you know what? I am going to make this happen. I am not going to give up. I'm going to make this happen or I'm going to die trying.
So this is key with this. We need to put this in a super headlock here for our guests. First off, the moment that you really turn it around, where the struggle starts to become easier for you. This is the whole point of the show. Your mindset switched from one where maybe you've given up before, but you had a sense of knowing that you were on the right track. And then the second thing is, that was the Pandora box opening moment. You're like, ding, here's where I'm supposed to be. Second one is, you had humility. Meaning, before, you might have said, well, F this. This isn't working out, and everybody's an idiot who's involved in it. But you had the humility to turn around and look at everybody. And I say the humility because you didn't buy into the notion that you're better or less than the other person. You just said, no, I'm going to actually look at the difference here. And you were humble enough to turn the finger to you and go, oh, it's something I'm doing. That's a huge life change moment for you where things started to get easier. Humility showed up in your process. Secondly, after that, where you make the switch, the money starts coming in, you didn't overreact, right? You're just seeing this as more evidence that you're on the right track. So you're focused, you're goal-oriented at the time, but you also have surrendered in life, where you made that leap from maybe saying, I'm better than, or less than before, and to just saying, oh, I'm going to look at what's working and not working. I'm going to make the leap.
I never thought about it that way, but yeah, sounds interesting. I mean, I have to kind of, that's heavy, but
it's heavy. That's what I do. All right. So we made it to the shift moment where things right. start to become easier for you, but you're still in a closet. And you're still making $500 increments. Let's fast forward in your life to where you're in the flow. What does the flow look like? What's going on? And what are the benchmarks for you where you're like, I'm really connected to who I am and what I want to be doing. And here's what's going on.
Listen, technically right now the flow is, look, we coach people. We coach people who are in business and people who need kind of a blueprint to break through, people who need clarity in their offer, in their messaging, they need contacts, they want a shortcut to success. And we coach people to that. That's the current flow, you know, but that for me is like, I see that as like, you know, the entrepreneurial journey is like here to here, you know, and here's, you know, where I was homeless. And then a lot of people think when you get to $1 million, you're here. But to me, it's just like, dink. I just like so far wherever I'm at, I literally just went dink. Do you know what I mean? And I feel like I have a long ways to go to really get into the flow, or at least my definition of what the flow would be. But currently, yeah, that's what I'm doing successfully. But I think, you know, always trying to evolve, never really fully satisfied, or I do have rare moments of satisfaction, but always kind of striving for more, to get to what my definition of flow would be. And I think that would be, although frankly, financially we do very well, but I think it would be a lot more financially abundant. Reason being only because honestly, we want to make a very big, you know, the definition of philanthropy is to increase the quality of mankind. And we want to make a significant impact, you know. So I think more so when I get to that level, will I be considered that, yes, I'm in a flow, I am in more, I'm doing something cool. Right now, I'm pretty hard on myself. You know, we're doing a lot of great things. We're helping a lot of people, and that's cool. But it's nowhere near where I'd like to be. Mm-hmm.
So I hear this. Now that you've made it across that divide, you're in a successful system, but there's still a part of you that's wants to make more of an impact. So that's the part of you that's maybe the Akbar that we heard about earlier, that when you started, when I asked you how you show up, you started talking about growth oriented. For you, flow is finding a way to kind of make bigger impact each and every day. Does that sound right?
Yes. And I think it's an ongoing discovery to even find out who I want that person to be. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example, right? Like, you know, I take a look at, was it last year? Or like a little over a year ago, right? Because I just got into this world not too long ago, where I started really, you know, helping people out. I had a job for a minute, my first ever job, which is kind of a long story, but it was for kind of a non-for-profit kind of company. It was interesting because I started business, you know, remember I told you I was growing from that one sale. I actually lost satisfaction in that, and I took a significant pay cut and I joined the non-for-profit kind of company here in Dallas because I'll never forget, I did a free hour consultation for them in California, in the Bay Area, but I got out of homelessness and actually got a, you know, nice place and so on and so forth. And it really benefited them. And I remember that same day I got a $20,000 commission check in the mail from my business. And I'll never forget, I had more satisfaction in that free hour consultation than the non-for-profit than I did by getting that $20,000 check. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget that. So I told them, I said, listen, I want to work for you guys. They said, we don't have a position. I said, create one. And they did. They created like a CMO type position. And I came out here, I helped them go to seven figures multiple times actually. And while I was working that job, I never gave a penny to charity because I didn't have any. We were living check to check. And as a matter of fact, I was going into debt every month. Then when I left that company because they didn't want to grow anymore, and then I started my business, which is the current business I'm in. Then I was able to start, you know, luckily I was blessed to give, you know, considerable amounts to charity. We try to give 10% of gross. In the beginning, it was cool to write those checks. Very quickly, it became just another check because we write so many checks and it was just another check, you know. And we don't see any of it because typically we sponsor orphans like in Africa, or we pay for blind children. We pay for their eye surgery to give them the gift of vision, again, somewhere in Africa. Or we build a well, again, somewhere in Africa. By the way, my parents are born in Africa. So when you ask me about flow, it's definitely going to be involved where I'm more hands-on, mm-hmm. you know, which is why I have farm written on my goal board. It's because, and I don't know where that idea is going, by the way, but I want to be hands-on. I want to take on a project and see, you know, immense growth. And I want to be a part of that. I want to be, you know, I want to help make that happen. And I want to help impact a lot of lives in a positive way. You know, so I think my flow will be closer aligned when that happens.
Well, I'm starting to hear something through this interview. One insight that I'm getting about you, Akbar, is it's not the thing that you're doing. Mm. There's a part of you that's hungering for impact. And the impact for you in terms of your story has always come around connection and sharing what you have. So you're still trying, there's still a part of you that's finding the way to do that in the purest form. And what I hear in your evolution is that gets pure and pure as you move forward, right? Like you're putting farm on the board because it represents this deeper instinct that you have. It's like, this is where real contact happens. So the thing that you're doing right now, I hear this, you're in flow in terms of you know how to make money, but the part of you that you're expressing in terms of your human experience is how to become a master at that next point is like, how do I support in the purest way? So let's move you into the flow. Now that we got into the flow for you, which is evolution, you're giving yourself the permission to be evolving and to evolve freely. That's what it sounds like. So on the other side of the flow is go. Where do you see yourself headed? And you've already started to talk about it a little bit, and it's kind of a fuzzy picture. Let's just put it this way. What's exciting you right now in your life?
It's funny, my son, He's 1 year old. And he had a crib in our room. And it was interesting because we would just have to kind of crawl into bed at night, you know, and very quietly and not say a word, because if we did, he's very sensitive. He wakes up. Mm-hmm. So we'd literally have to close the light, crawl into bed, you know, barely say goodnight to each other. I'm talking about my wife and I. And we would just, you know, go to bed. The other day I insisted, you know, because we've been talking about this forever. I'm like, dude, we just have to take action, do it right now. And in the middle of dinner, I just said, no, we're going to move his crib right now. And we moved it into my daughter's room, who's two. It's been the craziest thing. It's like we've gotten a part of our lives back. Like we go to bed now, the lights are on, we're reading, you know, we're talking, right, we'll watch something, you know, on the computer or whatever. And it's like, this is cool. And it was nice to have a little bit of space and read things that I enjoy reading, you know, whether it's spiritual books or I just bought, I forget the name of it. I think it's called This Is America by Sam Walton. It's the Walmart story. Mm-hmm. I'm enjoying that. I also enjoy spiritual books a lot. I was reading How to Become a Better Husband from a spiritual, from a religious perspective. I do love, I love business. I love religion. I love family. So these are the things that are exciting me now, is bringing the family together, living a little bit more of a balanced life. So yeah, man, something's always happening, right?
So let's imagine it's 30 years from now.
Oh, God.
And you're at home. Let's just say you're sitting in your library, you're reading one of your books. Maybe it's a religious book. Maybe it's a book about business or philanthropy, whatever. And your kids show up and they have their kids with them. And your grandkids come up to you and they're like, Grandpa, put the book down. So you put the book down and you say, what's up? And they say, we're hearing a lot of things about success, Grandpa. And we don't know what that is. What would you tell your grandkids success is?
I'm gonna need a minute. Good thing we're editing, but I'm definitely going to need a minute.
Oh, this often happens. It's a powerful question.
Yeah, it really is. I don't think I've ever been asked. I was never a religious person by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, I was kind of the exact opposite. I mean, you know, I was the kind of guy you'll find on a Wednesday afternoon at a casino, you know, with two ladies and a bottle of Jack. So, yeah, you know, you wouldn't call me very God-fearing. That's not the case anymore. Here's what I believe. I believe that the more you give, the more you get. Okay. And I think this is the promise that God has made, that the more you give, the more you get. And the more grateful you are, the more you get. So I think success is really following God's words. You know, it's funny. Sometimes people are like, man, I wish life came with a blueprint or an instruction manual. It does. You know, it really does. I think God teaches us how to interact with people, how to treat people, how to wake up, how to go to sleep, how to treat your children, how to treat your family, how to treat your community, how to treat your neighbors, you know, how to conduct business, how to conduct philanthropy, how to eat, how to drink, how to sleep, how to do everything. Mm-hmm. So to me, true success is following God's words.
Well, and I also hear something else in terms of your story, your powerful life shift, where things started to turn around from you, came from a place of surrender. And I hear you saying success for you is surrendering each and every day to this higher power and being grateful for what you do have. And power and success for you comes through that.
Well said.
Akbar, thank you so much for being super vulnerable. That was an amazing interview to be a part of.
Oh, thanks.
Thanks for being on the show. I hope you enjoyed your time here.
I did. Usually I don't. This is not the case, but I got a ton of benefit from this. It's been enlightening. Thank you very, very much.
All right, folks, that's a wrap. If you enjoyed the episode, please leave a review on whatever platform you're listening to. This just helps put it in the hands of the people likely to get something out of it. If you'd like to dig a little deeper and see what we got cooking here at TUI Media, you can visit our website at tuimedia.com. Wishing you grace to fill your sails today. Stay great in the meantime, and I'll see you on the next Pioneers of Insight.
So I tweaked my approach. I tweaked my script. I started having more of a servitude attitude. Mm-hmm. I was trying to say what's in it for them.